Psalm 17. I tried to deal a little bit with the Gethsemane that Jesus experienced and his disciples this morning. I'm going to try to look this evening for just a few minutes at a Gethsemane that you may experience. We will sooner or later have a Gethsemane experience. I mean by that, being under the attack of the wicked one, him trying to hinder, to hurt, to harm, to defeat, to overcome, to stop us from allowing the Lord to do what he desires in our life. Some say that Jesus prayed part of this psalm in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, because we don't know that for sure, he certainly prayed more than what's recorded in the gospel accounts. In fact, when he came back one time, he said, "Could you not pray with me 1 hour?" And that doesn't mean he's gone 60 minutes exactly, but it does mean that he is gone for a while in praying each of the three times. So whether this is part of what Jesus prayed in his Gethsemane experience or not, we don't know. But we do know this: David is having a Gethsemane type of experience. He has been wronged by Saul. He has had to flee. He is on the run. He did nothing but good to Saul. He tried to help him. He loved him. He cared for him. But Saul got jealous and turned on him, literally went a little bit berserk, to be honest. And as David is penning this psalm, the general thought is that Saul is chasing him. And David feels somewhat cornered in this attack from the enemy. We'll read just verse 1 to jump into the psalm. David's writing here: "The right, O Lord, attend unto my cry," literally means to scream out, "give ear unto my prayer that goeth not out of feigned lips." David is having a Gethsemane experience. He is having that place where the devil has pulled out all the stops, and his enemy Saul is after him and perhaps drawing close. And David realizes that if God doesn't intervene, death is certain. Remember that. Realize that. This is not just some little problem. McDonald's didn't forget his french fries and his Happy Meal, and he's got to drive all the way back to get them. He didn't even have a flat tire on the way to a business meeting. It wasn't something little. This is significant. It's something big. It's something serious. David is, as I've said, fleeing from Saul, trying to keep from having to even have conflict with him. But Saul won't give up. He keeps coming. And David is praying about that in this psalm. It reminds me of Jesus' conflict in the Garden of Gethsemane. David's enemy was Saul. Jesus' enemy was the devil. What's your enemy? What's after you? Well, what is it that the devil wants to use to corner you and to break you down, to defeat you, to stop you from serving God? David, I believe he can almost sense the breath of the enemy coming. He perhaps even hears the footprints of Saul as he's penning down this psalm. He is having a Gethsemane experience. And I say this evening, you also will have that type of experience. Look and see what we find here. David first says to the Lord, "Lord, hear me." Look in verse 1. He says it three times in one little short verse. "Hear the right. Oh, Lord, attend unto my cry. Give ear unto my prayer." He says, if you don't hear me, I have no hope. I need you. I need you desperately. You are my only hope. If you don't help me, I'm not going to get out of this mountainside. Saul's coming. He's angry. He's mean. He's able. He's equipped. He could snap off my head with a sword and not think a thing about it. He could end my life right here where I sit and nobody would say a word. You're my only hope, God. Hear my cry. Listen to me. Notice what he says, that goeth not out of feigned lips. It means that he's not putting on. He's not just praying the good night, see you in the morning prayer. He's not saying, now I lay me down to sleep. He is praying from his heart. He is unloading his burden. He is crying aloud, oh God, I need you. Hear me. Please don't close your ears to me now. I desperately need you. Got a question. You ever been to that place? You ever been to that place? I tell you, it's going to happen sooner or later. Where you realize if God doesn't help me, I have had it. I am facing something too big for me. I have been confronted by the devil and all that he has against me, and there's no hope. If God doesn't help me, I have had it. Oh, God, please don't close your ears to me now. Don't ignore me now. Oh, hear me, I cry to you. The good thing about it is our good God hears that kind of prayer. James reminds us of that when he says the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. He says a prayer from your heart. When you pour out your heart to God, when you open up and let him know what you're thinking and how you feel, he says that kind of prayer gets stuff done. It's effectual. It works. I say one thing. When you're facing your Gethsemane, you're not going to muddle through prayer. You're not going to mumble things that you don't even hardly think about. We're not going to pray when we don't even realize we're talking to God. David said, oh, Lord, hear my cry. I said, again, the word cry is like the scream of an animal that's been caught in a trap. Look in verse 3 and notice what it says. This is important. Thou hast proved mine heart. He says, you've searched me. You've examined me. He hints at it in the first part of the verse 1 where it says, hear the right. He says, I have examined my heart, and God, you have too. And I have peace in my heart, and you have confirmed it, that what I'm facing is not my fault. I have not done wrong. I am not getting what I deserve. You're not paying me back. This is not me getting my just deserts. I am not reaping what I have sowed. He says, I have been examined by God, and he has found me innocent, but I'm still suffering. The enemy doesn't even care if I'm guilty or not. Hey, Saul doesn't even care now what I've done. He is so angry. He has settled in his heart. He's going to put me to death if he can. Notice what he says in the last part of verse 3. I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress. He says, Lord, I need you to hear me. I need you to listen to me because I have it settled in my heart. Though Saul is doing wrong, and Saul has done me wrong, I have settled in my heart, I will not return his wrong with wrong. I am going to do what's right if you'll help me. I promise you, God, I have purposed in my heart, I will do right even though I'm being treated wrong. Even when you're going through your Gethsemane, one of the things we must realize, in fact, the one thing we must realize, the importance of doing right. He says, I have decided no matter what happens, I'm going to serve my Lord. I'm going to do what he wants me to do. He says, Lord, hear me. He says also, Lord, hold me. Look in verse 5. Hold up my goings in thy paths. He literally is saying, hold me while I'm walking the way you want me to go. You have set my path.
thy path. I'm going the way you've directed me. I'm living my life as you have told me. I'm trying to do what you want me to do. And as I'm walking your way, I'm walking your path. Oh, God, will you hold me? Hey, remember, he's in mountains. And literally, footing on mountains is treacherous. Very easy to fall. Literally, he is saying, Lord, hold me up so I don't fall going down this path through this mountain. But he's saying spiritually, oh, God, please. Oh, God, please hold me up. I don't want to fall. I don't want to fail you. I don't want to do something wrong. I don't want to do something to grieve my God. He says, Lord, hear me, but Lord, hold me. I don't want to fail. Lord, please don't let me fail. Hold me up in my goings and thy path that my footsteps slip not. I don't want to fail. I don't want to fall. Oh, God, I don't want to disgrace you now. When you're going through a Gethsemane experience and it's getting real tough and real difficult, it's real easy to do wrong. It's real easy to give up. It's real easy to say, that's what I get for serving God. Who cares? David said, oh, God, hold me. Hold me up. I want to walk with you. I want to obey you. I want to please you. I want my life to honor you. He says, don't let me fail. Don't let me fall. He also says, don't let me forget. Look in verse 6. I have called upon thee. He said, I remember a time when I called on you and you heard me. And God, right now that sure does mean a lot to me. Because I'm calling on you again. Oh, I need you now. I'm so glad I can look back, says David, and see a time in my past when I needed you then. And when I called on you, you held me up. You picked me up. You helped me through. You helped me not fall. Lord, please hold me again. Help me not forget what you've done in my past. Help me not forget who you are and how strong you are. Help me not forget that you really do love me in spite of what I'm facing. He said, Lord, hear me. Lord, hold me. Verse 7, he said, Lord, help me. Notice, show thy marvelous loving kindness. O thou that savest by thy right hand them which put their trust in thee from those that rise up against him. He said, O Lord, show me your marvelous loving kindness. You're the one that saves people when the enemy's coming. You're the one that saves people out of impossible places. And right now I need that. Because I'm in a place that I cannot get out of myself. I'm in an impossible place. I am, if you will, in my words, it's a Gethsemane experience. And David says, oh, Lord, help me. You're my only hope. Listen, you're my only hope. You're my only hope. If you don't help me, I have had it. If you don't come in mercy, if you don't give me strength, if you don't protect me from Saul, if you don't deliver me out of this circumstance, I have had it. You are my only hope. I want to tell you, when you get to where God's your only hope, it's scary. When friends can't help, family can't help, church can't help, nobody can help, nothing can help. If God doesn't do something miraculous, you have had it. That's a Gethsemane experience. If God doesn't step into your situation and help you, you have had it. That's a scary place to be, but I said before, it's a good place to be because God does his best work when things are impossible. When he's your only hope, you're in a good place because that's when he can step in. That's when we don't trust anything else other than him. He says, oh, Lord, help me. He said, you're the one that saves people. You're the one that comes in and helps people when they're in a dark place. You're the one that saves people. You're the one that delivers people. Lord, I need that deliverance now. David said in his Gethsemane experience, Lord, hear me, hold me, help me. Look in verse 8, he says, hide me. Look in verse 8. Keep me as the apple of thine eye. Hide me under the shadow of thy wings. He says, Lord, I feel like a little bitty. And I think I can see the storm coming. And this is scary. Oh, the clouds are so dark and the wind's blowing so hard and the thunder's so loud and the lightning's so bright. Oh, God, I'm so scared of this storm. But I see Mama flapping her wings, and I run under Mama's wings, and she settles them down all around me and all my brothers and sisters, and all of a sudden, we don't even notice the storm. We're in there under that wing, and we're safe and sound, and the storm's still raging. The wind's still blowing. It's still dark and ugly outside. But under Mama's wings, we're safe and sound, and we ain't scared any longer. Hide me like Mama hen hides her little bitties. That word there, hide, it has the idea of thinking about being completely surrounded. That means, number one, the storm is everywhere. There's not a break in the clouds. There's not a hope of help. There's not a glimmer of hope. There's not a cloud with a silver lining. Everything's dark. Everything's dreary. Everything's bad. There's not one hope I can look at other than God. He says, I am surrounded by my storm. My problem has attacked me from every side. But he said, that ain't the only thing that surrounded me. He says, all that storm is everywhere. Nowhere it's not. But my mama's wings have also surrounded me. And I am safe and secure inside up underneath her wings. Those wings in that body also surrounds me. He says, Lord, hide me. It means, look at verse 9 and verse 11. He talks about compass. It means to surround. He means help me in every way I need. Don't forget anything. He says, Lord, hear me. Lord, hold me. Lord, help me. Lord, hide me. And in verse 13, he starts talking about, Lord, hedge me. Look in verse 13. Arise, O Lord, disappoint him. Cast him down. Deliver my soul from the wicked. He starts talking to the Lord about what he wants to do with the enemy, with Saul. And he says, Lord, when Saul has a plan, and he knows it's going to work. When he sits down with his generals and they decide what they're going to do with little old David and how they're going to surround him and his few little men and how he's going to defeat us easily, he said, Lord, put a hedge about me that it might hinder, that it might, he might be disappointed. He'll try it and fail. Try something and fail. Try something else and fail. Saul might be frustrated. Saul might think, what in the world have I got to do to get David? Nothing I try works. David has said, oh God, hedge me. Hedge me about. I have no place to hide. You ever felt like there's no place to hide? Now he just asked the Lord to hide him, but sometimes it feels like you ain't got nowhere to hide. There's no way in the world to stop the attack. Nowhere else to go. So David said, Lord, will you hedge me about? Verse 13, he said, arise and disappoint and cast and deliver. He said, I'm needing you to hold them off. Give me a little breathing room. Let me just get a breath. Just let me catch my breath a little bit. Do like you did Job. He told the devil, yeah, you can do it, but you got to stop right here. You can go a little further, but you can't go but so far. He is saying, oh, God, hedge me about. Stop him. He's so close, and he's so mean, and he's so equipped, If you don't stop him, I've had it. Hedge him in. Close him off. Disappoint him. I think about the children of Israel. They're getting ready to cross the Red Sea. Pharaoh and all his army comes, and listen, Israel is a goner. Israel has no hope. I mean, they are definitely going to be defeated. Pharaoh has caught up with them, and all his soldiers far outrank those little peasants that's been working in mud and clay for 400 and some years. And those people of Israel are defeated. But the Bible says that God brought a cloud. And the cloud went between Israel and Egypt. Listen to what it says, Exodus 14:20. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud of darkness to them, but it gave light to the night to these, so that one came not near the other all the night. Just about time Pharaoh was about to catch him, God just pops up in the cloud. And on this side of people of Egypt, all they saw was darkness. They couldn't see through it. All of a sudden, Israel was gone. Now they were still there, but they were gone. They were still there, but Egypt couldn't find them. And on the other side of the cloud was bright and light to Israel, where they could go across the Red Sea. That's what I thought about when I thought about David here. David said, put a hedge up. If you're not going to stop them from coming, put a hedge up where you'll hinder his progress and keep me safe. He says, hedge me. You remember when Israel started going on across the Red Sea and the cloud dispersed, Egypt started coming. Here again, seems like defeat certain. And God made the chariot wheels of Pharaoh heavy. And they just fell off. The best chariots in the world fell apart. Because God just says, squish. He stopped them. And David said, if you could do that for Moses, if you could do that for Noah, if you could do that for other men, you could do that for other people. Could you do it for David? David said, hedge me. Then lastly, starting in verse 14, David says, hear me and hold me and help me and hide me and hedge me. But he said, humble me. Verse 14, the last part. Let's go ahead and read it all. From men which are thy hand, O Lord, from men of the world. Let me just stop there. Look on in verse 13. That reminded me of something in both these verses. Arise, O Lord, disappoint him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked. Now we know what he's saying. Saul is wicked and ungodly and trying to harm God's man. But notice the last four words of that verse 13. Which is thy sword. God, this is your work. You are allowing Saul to do this for a reason. It's like Joseph said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. I want to tell you, when you get cornered, when you get boxed into a Gethsemane experience, remember, God puts you there. God allowed it to happen. There's a reason. It's a work that God's trying to do in your life and mine. Verse 14, from men which are thy hand, O Lord, from men of the world, which have their portion in this life, and whose belly thou fillest with thy hid treasure, they are full of children, leave the rest of their substance to their babies. Listen, as for me, he says, Lord, what you do with them is up to you. If you want to bless them, that's up to you. He comes to this point to where he finally says, he's already been saying, he has almost said, Lord, kill Saul in this psalm. He came short of that, but he came real close to it. But he has prayed, Lord, hinder him. And he has prayed, Lord, almost prayed, hurt him. But now God's done a work in his life. And he says, Lord, whatever you do with them is up to you. Even if you want to bless them. Look at verse 15. As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. He said, whatever you do to Saul, it's up to you. I'm okay with it. But for me, I want you to humble me. I want you to bring me to the point to where nothing means more to me than doing your will. That when you look in my face, you see a face of righteousness. When you look in my life, you see a life that's clean. You see a life that's dedicated. I want you to humble me. In fact, that's what he is doing. He's humbling David. The last part of the verse, I shall be satisfied. Whatever you want to do with them and with me, I will be satisfied. But he's saying more than that. He's saying right now, I will be satisfied. When I wake, when I get up in the morning, whatever's happening, it'll be all right. But he's saying more than that. When I wake up in the everlasting morning, I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. He says, Lord, it really is hard. And I really don't understand. But I just want to say, if you'll just make me like you, if you'll use this experience I'm going through to make me like you, I'll be satisfied. I'll be content. Lord, humble me. Oh, God, you need to break me, break me. If you need to hurt me, hurt me. I can trust you, God. I can trust you. You're a good God. You love me. I want you. And this is exactly what he is doing, humbling David, breaking him down. And friend, that's what he wants to do with us. That's what he wants to do with you and me. He wants to break us down. He wants to humble us. He wants us to bring us down to the point where nothing matters but his will. And his word and his way in our lives. And it's probably going to take a Gethsemane experience for that to happen. You don't learn that in Sunday school. Maybe y'all come to Sunday school. You don't learn that at church. I think y'all come to church. We learn that by experiencing bad things, hard things. Hurtful things, confusing things, but things that God has allowed to come because he's trying to make something out of us. Jesus faced the devil. David faced Saul. Jesus prayed through. So did David. Jesus prayed through the victory. So did David. Jesus prayed through, even though he was humble from the first, he was even, it could say this, more humble at the end. And so was David. The bad thing about it is when we face those kind of things and we resist it and fight against what God's trying to do. Now all we're doing is setting ourselves up for another Gethsemane experience. Because if I don't learn it today, he's going to try and teach me next week. We've got a good God who brings us to the end of ourselves. And then helps us just to show us he's able to where he can give him the glory. Let's stand together. I mean, you come ahead. If there's something you want to pray about, I realize this is hopefully a message we just take home with us. But there may be someone who needs to pray. There may be somebody lost tonight and needs to be saved. Maybe somebody saved but just needs to pray. You mind the Lord. Father, please. Help us. I ask you to have your will with us, Lord. Do your work and do it thorough. Don't listen to our whines. Do the work thoroughly, Lord, and completely in us all.